Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Tony Roach back on the show. Tony's been on a handful of times, one of the busiest guys in the industry, running a guide service. Tony's also going into season two. He's a few episodes into season two as the host of the new Dialed In Angling TV series. Really, really great content, of course, and so I want to direct people to that. Head to YouTube or wherever. And figure out the show schedule for Dialed In Angling with Tony Roach as the host. And we talk all about it on this show to get an update on what last year was like. Because, you know, last time I talked to Tony, he was just getting started with season one. So we kind of get a little bit of a season one recap now that we're heading into season two. And we get a little bit of a sneak peek into what's going on right now and what to expect down the road. And also, Dialed In Angling has launched a new podcast. So if you like listening to this podcast and listening to the guests and learning, just listening to good fishing information, get locked on to Dialed In Angling podcast with Tony Roach. He's a lot of the guests that he has on for the video content. He sits down with and does a podcast with. They talk about, they kind of hash up the behind the scenes of the video content, as well as just great fishing topics that are timely. And, no better individuals to be listening to than Tony Roach and anybody that Tony Roach would do a podcast with, because tons of respect for that guy, and he's done a lot of fishing, so his experience is invaluable, and that's why I love having him on. So without further ado, let's get into it here. We've got Tony Roach from Dialed In Angling. We're talking all things fishing. Let's get to it. Twin Island Sleepers is located 14 miles north of Williams, Minnesota, on the Long Point shoreline of Lake of the Woods. Twin Island Sleepers offers a deluxe ice fishing experience where you can spend day and night in a sleeper fish house. They have offerings of 4-person sleepers all the way and up to 8-person. So if you're a small group or you're a big group, maybe it's family get together or something more corporate, these fish houses offer fantastic amenities to be fishing all day and then spending the night in comfort. Check out everything they have to offer at twinislandsleepers.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability, the stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Last time we talked ice fishing together, and maybe I should have done a little more research on this, but I think the last time we talked ice fishing last year, you were maybe only one or two episodes in of filming, dialed in angling, and you know, the whole early ice season that it was last year is like a whole talker in and of itself. But I do want to get kind of the update, the current status update of you, the dialed in angling, kind of your fishing update. But I kind of want to include a little bit of like a reflection off of last year. You know, we didn't talk sort of like after the season, or you know, or like late ice about it necessarily. So, you know, maybe we kind of start there. Let's get a little bit of an update, and kind of reflecting on last year, how last year went, things you learned, things you kind of took away, heading into this season and the scheduling, and yeah, just kind of, you know, get a little bit caught up with Tony Roach, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, man. No, I appreciate you having me on. Last year, obviously with the ice conditions that we had all last season, it, you know, there was a challenge each and every week just because of weather. You know, it had nothing to do with the fishing itself, but like weather and where's ice and making sure that, you know, the crew that's coming out with me is safe. You know, the producers of the show had never, I mean, they had shot tons of ice fishing and lots of outdoor content, but, you know, being our first year of shooting an ice fishing show, we didn't have ice, you know? So we, I think one of the first ice episode we ran up and met with one of your good buddies, Brian Bogdan, in Wekusko Falls. So that was a cool experience in itself, you know, just to kind of have to drive, you know, 15 hours north to get good fishable ice. And even then Brian wasn't on that great ice. We walked out with Brian, and of course the fishing's so good, you can just walk out up there and catch 100 walleyes. So, you know, it turned out to be a killer, ice fishing segment. But yeah, after having kind of a full year under my belt, after last year, this year seems really gravy, you know, because we've had early ice. There's fishing opportunities all over the Midwest. Matter of fact, we kicked off this season in Devil's Lake, which was awesome. You know, I love fishing Devil's Lake. And it's been a good year so far. And after last year, everything seems so much easier. You know, the opportunities are a lot greater. There's fishing all over the Midwest right now. Even some of the southern tier ice belt areas are already experiencing good ice. So yeah, life's good if you got an ice fishing show, that's for sure. And now we're into season two, and continuing with new fresh content, different episodes, visiting locations that we've, you know, never really visited before. So it's, everything's super new and fresh to me. I mean, I know like Jason Mitchell, it'd probably be old hat to him because he's been everywhere fishing, right? But for me, you know, all these new fishing experiences, some of them are places that I haven't been in a while, and some are, you know, places that are fresh and brand new to me. So it's been really fun, actually.
That, I didn't even know if I'd be able to ask you this, but what you're bringing up is something that I had written down in my notes for you, of like scheduling a television show, going from season one to season two. Now, traveling to fish, I've learned this about you. Traveling to fish, fishing new water is like not something that's new to you, but you are a fishing guide. I think probably the majority of the podcasts that I've had you on, I probably poke and prod at some of the things that relate more to your guide career, where it's on like, you know, your home bodies of water where you have a lot of experience. But traveling to fish is not something new to you. Showing people how to break down something that isn't exactly your backyard. These aren't a school of fish that you've been on for the last 7 days, and now you bring the cameras out. It's like, no, you're filming when you get to this body of water. Maybe you have a guest on the show or whatever that's a little more familiar, but I'm curious about those kind of stories and just more of that, like what makes it so fun to you, but also like, you know, the like filming it and trying to do it justice and educate people.
Well, I mean, the fun aspect is simply that. I mean, I've been full-time guiding now for over 20 years, so you know, when you're in that realm of guiding, you know, you have to get ready for each season, and you know, you're checking ice conditions and you're making sure people are on safe ice, but then you're finding fish for them, you know, whether it's on Mille Lacs or Winnie or wherever, you know, where we're taking customers. This gets me out of that. This gets me back fishing early ice situations, or even across the season I normally wouldn't get to go to just because of my busy guide schedule. And so that's been the funnest part about this whole, you know, dialed in angling, is the fact that I can go to all these different locations, get to fish with some of my friends, even get to do it on my own. But get to fish in these locations where, you know, I haven't been able to do that in the last 20 years. You know, I'm kind of locked down with customers, so I'm focused on getting them fish somewhere. And truthfully, I get to fish a lot more. I know that sounds weird coming from a guy who fishes every day, but when you're guiding, especially ice guiding, you're first and foremost, or you're making sure that the ice is safe. And then second, you're getting people on fish. So you're just constantly always scouting for fish. The TV show is not a whole lot different, but I get to scout for fish for myself and for the viewers, you know. So, yeah, we get to a location and we kind of just start to tell our story as far as drilling holes, using forward-facing sonar, using underwater cameras, whatever we need to do to find fish in those locations, and then we immediately get after it. I don't get to spend a week in these locations, as you know. I mean, we show up, we start looking for fish. I might have a few hours before the camera guy gets there, or it might be just when he gets there and we just start filming. And so I get to break down water just like I would for my guide customers, but just kind of get to do it in a little bit different platform, if you will, in filming. So it's really, I mean, it's not apples and oranges, the filming portion and the guiding portion, because you're still looking for fish, you're looking for active fish, you're looking to get on different bites and show different presentations. And there has already been a few scenarios where I got into a location and I thought, you know, for example, we were going to chase jumbo perch all day and we ended up catching a whole bunch of walleyes and stumbling into like a giant school of walleyes. So then, you know, it gets to be, it's going to be a walleye show. And this is exactly what unfolded. I had, you know, another filming, you know, another episode where we got there and I thought it was going to be really easy to find the fish in this particular location because it was a smaller body of water. Well, we had to drill a lot of holes. We drilled like 300 holes, and like we were just scanning with the forward-facing sonars for about 2.5 hours before we even wet a line, and then we found the fish. And then they were absolutely loaded in one location. So, yeah, we kind of showcased having to put in that work to find those fish. And, you know, that's fishing's fishing. I don't care if I'm in my boat or if I'm on the ice. You have to find them, right? And hunting them down is like the biggest challenge, and it's what I love doing. You know, I always tell people I love catching them, but I like finding them and hunting them. I don't know if that makes sense to people who are listening. The hunt is what I'm after.
What's kind of your process, if you will, breaking down new water for almost any type of fish? Like if there's any kind of like universal sort of mindset that, you know, that you feel like you possess when you're embracing that initial like grind of hunting down fish?
Yeah, for me, I mean, it starts way before I get to a location. Like I am a huge map geek. So I'm always kind of drooling over maps and researching maps because I'm looking for, you know, what kind of body of water is this? Is it a basin situation? Is it tons of structure? Is the lake that we're going to super clear? Is it dirty water? You know, what type of species, you know, are in that particular body of water? So I drool over maps all the time. I'm laser focused on doing research before I get there. And then, you know, kind of asking around. I have a good network of fishing friends that, you know, are fish heads like me, and usually we know someone in those areas, so we can, you know, I reach out to people all the time and network with people like, hey, you know, we're going out to, you know, South Dakota, for example, or North Dakota, you know, do you know anybody in this area? And like, yeah, my buddy guides over there, my buddy fishes it all the time, or, you know, I got friends that live in Devil's Lake, for example. And I, you know, I'm the same way. I've got a bunch of friends all over the Midwest that fish. And so I'm able to network with them a little bit, just asking and poking around about bites. And then, of course, when I get to new locations, regardless of the species I'm chasing, I try not to fall in the trap of, like, I know where these fish are, or I know how I'm going to fish. I sort of look for fish first. And now, especially like with forward-facing sonar, you can really cover water much quicker than you could, you know, before just drilling and you know, just trying to land on them. You know, before it was like sort of throwing a dart at a dartboard. Now your bullseye has gotten bigger, if you will. You can look at fish in much shallower situations. You can look at fish out in basins, and you can cover basins quicker. And I try to break down those bodies of water, even if they're super large, you know, because it's the daunting task for me to find fish, especially in big systems like Devil's Lake, for example. You've got Devil's Lake proper, and then you got all these lakes around there. You know, how do you break that down quickly when you only have a couple days to film? And so, you know, that happens a lot. I like big bodies of water just because there's big fish potential. There's usually more fish potential. And so I seek out a lot of big bodies of water, and that's where I want to fish, you know, and that's what I want to showcase. And, you know, some of the destinations might be based on what the destination is known for, whether it's walleyes or perch or panfish or whatever. You know, other pieces might be, you know, going somewhere and you're actually fishing with someone, so you're kind of showcasing them and the body of water. I like doing that too, because I get to know people by sitting on the ice with them or sitting in the shelter. You know, you get to fish with them for a couple of days, so you get to know them. Some of them are old friends where, you know, we don't get to fish together that much because they make their living on the water, on the ice. I do the same, so I don't get to see them very often. And when we get together to film, we're actually doing it for work. So, you know, life is good. So I've had several of my good buddies that I get to actually go fishing with and film with, you know, some of which are maybe from that region, or some might be that they're just traveling with me because me and that person work really well together as far as finding fish fast. And so, you know, like I can think of like Nick Sakella, for example. He's a good friend of mine. He guides for me. Well, I drag Nick along all the time because him and I work really well together. I'll run an auger, he'll run on electronics, vice versa. And then boom, boom, we just start breaking down things and we get on to fish a lot quicker that way. And I think a lot of anglers can relate, as especially ice fishermen. If you can work together on the ice and you can just keep the rods in the rod in your rod box or rod bag and find the fish first, you're going to have a way more successful trip than just breaking out the rods and start fishing right away. If you can go out and look for fish first and find them, your trip to whatever destination you're going to is going to be 10 times better if you work as a team and find those fish. And sometimes it's, you know, I can think of a scenarios where it's not even forward facing sonar. It's someone drilling holes and then someone else running behind you with an underwater camera, you know, scouting through cabbage weeds, trying to find big bluegills, for example, or jumbo perch or crappies. I can think of so many of those scenarios where it's just like, okay, this is how we're going to tackle this particular body of water, but we have to do it as a team. And when we do that, you know, we're more successful. I do that with my guide service. I do the same thing with dialed in angling.
Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Twin Island Sleepers is located 14 miles north of Williams, Minnesota, on the Long Point shoreline of Lake of the Woods. Twin Island Sleepers offers a deluxe ice fishing experience where you can spend day and night in a sleeper fish house. They have offerings of four-person sleepers all the way and up to eight-person. So if you're a small group or you're a big group, maybe it's family get-together or something more corporate, these fish houses offer fantastic amenities. To be fishing all day and then spending the night in comfort, check out everything they have to offer at twinislandsleepers.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. You've brought up like forward facing sonar. I know you're a electronics guru. I think we've talked about it. Like every time I have you on, where I'm always mentioning, but I'm curious, like from an ice fishing perspective, you brought up forward sonar, breaking down big bodies of water foreign to you, not your home body of water, like utilizing it as a big tool. We talk about it all the time on here. I'm curious for you, what are some of the things, what are some of the scenarios where you feel like forward sonar really, really shines for you? You know, the situations that you've been in where it's really, really been the deciding factor. And also maybe some of the things that you feel like you've learned from it, or validated, or maybe just learned completely. I'm just sort of curious about an update from you, Tony, on forward sonar through the ice.
So the one thing I've learned the most is like, it's not the end all, like it's not the solution for everything, because there are scenarios, let's say, like I just stated before, where you're in really heavy vegetation, especially in shallow, really shallow water situations, or heavy timber or cover, where it's tough to break down and it's tough to see out far enough where you're not spooking fish, for example, with forward-facing sonar. And in those scenarios, especially in clear water, cameras really shine. That's where, you know, I just look at forward-facing sonar as just another tool in the toolbox that you can utilize to find fish quicker. I'd say where it really shines is like big basin areas, or big, even just large structure areas in general, where normally it would take you a long time to drill holes and then look with 2D sonar to see if the fish are in those locations. Whereas forward-facing sonar, now I can see them and I can see out 120 feet. And so now I can cover water much quicker than I could have before with just 2D sonar. And so in that scenario, yes, it's an invaluable tool to ice anglers, to people on a boat, and so then you can get on a much quicker. Now, you still have to figure out, okay, what they are, what are they? You still have to figure out how to get them to bite. So it's not the end all, or it's not the solution to everybody's issue. I mean, there's so many times where you land on them, and one, you can't get them to bite, or two, they just keep moving and they're negative. What I've learned a lot from forward facing sonar is the mood of fish, right? If they're in a bitey mood, they don't care if you're drilling holes and moving around and walking and driving UTVs and trucks and snowmobiles. If they're negative, they don't even like the signal from the 2D sonar, or the signal from the forward facing sonar. And so, they can be as negative as that, where, even shooting them with the signal turns them and they take off. I've had it where they've been super negative. You go to drill a hole over the top of them in 30 feet of water, they're already spooking. And that goes for crappies, that goes for walleyes, that goes for perch. You can really tell the mood of the fish, or I can, just because I look at it so many times. I can tell the mood of the fish with forward-facing sonar, and I've learned a lot about their moods. And all of a sudden, you start getting into like peak feeding periods or feeding windows, and they don't care, man. They're just up chasing. They're moving. They're moving all around in the water column. They're moving depths. They're coming up, from deeper basin up onto structure, and they're feeding. When they're feeding, there's something to be said about peak feeding windows. And I used to be like kind of a non-believer in the kind of the lunar tables, or the you hear there's a major or a minor. I kind of bought into it a little bit, but man, I've sure become a believer, especially with a lot of the lunar tables, just based on what I'm seeing with forward facing sonar. And that's a true statement I've found, especially like these full moons, and some of these peak feeding windows kind of hold true, man. I'm starting to come around on the idea.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. You articulate it really, really well there. And we were actually just recently in South Dakota, and we got down there, kind of classic, like you said, from a filming perspective. Sometimes you go somewhere and you kind of think you got a bit of a plan in mind as to what you're going there to try to do. And well, the first part of this trip, we were thinking we were going to go catch some perch, but after like 5 or 6 hours, it was so tough on us. Like, we ended up like walleye fishing with tip ups. It was like the total opposite, right? But it was interesting when utilizing forward sonar, when we were doing that, trying to catch some perch, we were seeing a lot of fish, and it was amazing how, we were moving fish. It was like not super deep water and thin ice, no snow on the ice, drilling holes and walking around on the ice was hard on the fish. We were moving fish, and it made it really hard for us to kind of hole hop and get on them. The fish that we were on, it was just hard to get them to bite. But it was interesting from that like morning bite window throughout the day, it was amazing how with forward sonar we could sort of tell, with the same school of fish or the same area of fish, when they were, like you said, super negative or just super finicky and just rejecting us, you couldn't walk anywhere near, fish on top of fish, or much less drill a hole. By the time you were even pressing the trigger on the auger, they had already moved. So it wasn't even like the auger's fault. The auger just made it worse. And then like throughout the ebbs and flows of the day, the fish would just get a little bit more durable to those things. And it was at one point in time, it was kind of a tough outing at that time for us. And I remember we were kind of celebrating the fact that there was a small group of fish that allowed us to drill on them, and they stayed under. They like stayed under us. And I remember us, we were like jokingly like, oh, well, at least this must be a good sign, because they stuck around, but they wanted nothing to do with the lures. But interestingly, that's kind of a data point. Like you said, like some of the times these fish, like if you're entering a bite window or you're getting into those, a time where you got a little bit of fish, like some of that stuff we can pay attention to, and it can matter if you're willing to kind of interpret it.
Well, I'm laughing because I can totally relate. I we did a segment last year about doing like fish drives, where I'd actually kind of drill towards the guys to kind of push this whole school of crappies and bluegills towards them because you could not get on top of them if you had been fishing by yourself. And, you know, I can completely relate to that. I do it guiding all the time now where I'm trying to like kind of push fish towards customers, or, you know, maybe if we get into an area where there's fish, I'll actually drill a few holes and then just let it sit and kind of let those fish come back to you, if you will. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. And it all depends on what kind of bitey mood they're in. If they're spooky, but they're feeding, they're going to come back to your holes. You know, other times if they're just negative, you can wait all day long and they're not going to come back. They're just kind of neutral, if you will, or, you know, just kind of hanging out there, not feeding.
Yeah. Do you feel like early ice? I mean, this is another one where, again, it's not like a controversial topic, but everybody does have maybe slightly different, you know, opinions, maybe usually just based upon personal experience and wherever they fish and whatever the species, right? It's all very situational. But generally speaking, do you feel like early ice is one of those times where, you know, that super like finesse approach, or like that stealth approach to where you're like not spooking fish? Like, where do you feel like early ice versus like midwinter and all that sort of stuff like stacks up? Because that's another one where, especially when we're trying to teach people that maybe don't have forward sonar and don't necessarily relate to all these things like visually or, you know, with personal experience that we talk about, but it's a good teaching sort of tool, right, where we can talk about these things, and maybe somebody doesn't have forward sonar, but they might have enough experience on their own body of water with fish patterns that they can take something away from it. And I think like that kind of question of like, where do you feel like the early ice, where that real stealth approach where maybe you drill some holes and then just sort of, you know, waiting it out versus really trying to just, you know, Swiss cheese an area where the auger never shuts off, you know, the cleats are running around everywhere. Like certain times of year where that's a bigger factor than others. You got any opinions on that?
Early ice for sure. Without a doubt. I've learned so much early ice just with forward facing sonar and how spooky the fish actually are. And I just remember, I kind of related to spring fishing, like spring crappie fishing with my dad. My dad was always nuts about like not banging the boat and not getting too close to these schools. So they're just so spooky that time of year. Well, it's the same early ice. It seems like early ice with your ice cleats, with dragging a sled, especially when there's not snow. They are so spooky. It's unbelievable. And I've learned so much by watching them. The other time and the other scenario would be when the fish are shallow. These shallow water fish, boy, they hear everything. You know, it's like they can feel everything. They sense everything. I don't know if it's with their lateral line, but it seems like auger noise in particular, or cleats. Like I heard you mention cleats or dragging sleds, like that hard plastic sled. That just must resonate because you don't even have to walk over the top of them doing that. And then boom, the fish are gone, you know, even from 100 feet away. And so, you know, I'm the type of person, I mean, everybody that knows me knows I drill a ton of holes and I like moving around and I like hole hopping, you know, usually in most scenarios. But I actually, over the last couple of years, I've slowed down a little bit. I still drill a lot of holes when I'm looking, but when we start landing on schools of fish, I limit the number of holes. I don't start just ripping holes everywhere. I kind of limit the number of holes that I'll drill just so I'm not pushing that school away from an area. Let's say it's like a little depression or it's a little hump that we're on, you know, whatever it may be. I try, you know, if the fish are there, I'll drill a couple holes, but then I'll just see how the fish are reacting before I start kind of lighting up a whole area. Because I used to get to let's say like a hump, for example, and I would just blow it up, man. I would blow up every edge of that thing so we could fit every inch of that water. And now, you know, I sort of have to limit myself. Now, if people are listening that know me, they know I still drill a ton of holes, so they're probably laughing. I'm like, yeah, right, he doesn't do that. But I actually do. I mean, I've throttled back from, I used to put holes every, you know, 2-3 feet apart on a brake line just because I knew that, you know, if fish weren't in bitey moods, they wouldn't come to your lure. You had to land right on top of them. Well, you know, how many fish did I blow off those humps when I was doing that, especially early ice? now I sort of limit the amount of holes, and also I'll spend more time in a hole if I know the fish are in that area. We were just out the other day chasing walleyes, same thing, had to drill a few holes, and we just sat there and wait, and those fish did come back. They will come back, especially if they're feeding, and they started moving in our area. Pretty soon there was schools of jumbo perch, everything kind of settled down. But if I had completely lit up that whole hump like I wanted to, or feel like I should inside, we probably would have spooked all those fish off that area. I can say without a doubt, if for walleye fishing, for example, if you're going to set up on a shallow water hump, doesn't matter if it's early ice or not. If you want to get out there early in the morning, get your holes drilled, get your, shack flipped over you or whatever you're doing, and just stay quiet, turn the lights down, and just be ready when those fish come and get there early, almost like you're deer hunting. Same thing can be said for like in the evening, like you want to get into this rock pile or wherever the fish are concentrating or they're going to be feeding in the evening, get there early, get set up at 2-3 o'clock. That way, when the fish start coming through at 4-4:30, you're not making a bunch of noise. You're not driving a truck out to that spot and spooking this fish. When you do that, it's amazing how many more walleyes you're going to catch by being there early. It reminds me exactly of deer hunting and getting in your deer blind or your deer stand, well in advance, so you're not bumping all these deer on your way in there.
I wonder how far the extent of that goes. Like if you and I were deer hunting together somewhere, and say we had a property between the two of us, and we had all these stands and all these trail cameras and all this knowledge, like we would know better than to go hunt a couple of like our A spots for some target bucks if the conditions weren't perfect, if we couldn't get in there on time and we were going to be an hour late, and just like the chance where you're just really, really confident that it's a high risk situation, like we would either not go hunting or we would choose secondary spots that maybe we felt a little bit better about and or didn't care as much if we blew up. I wonder how much damage we might be doing to some of our best spots if they're spot on the spot, like a hump of some kind that's isolated. If you go in there, this is like it's almost like a blasphemous, like hypothetical. I don't know if there's anything that could ever come of it, but like I wonder if you go in there sometimes and blow these spots up, just how long it takes them to recharge. We don't know what we're doing to ourselves if it's like, our A spot. I wonder if it's like maybe a guy needs to have enough spots that, if you're not going to get in there on time, or if you're not going to, if it's not, ideal, you're going to be in there just boring holes. You're going to have too many people. It's like some of these spots we almost need to take a little bit more careful of. But maybe I'm overthinking it, I guess.
No, you're on the right path, because think of this, like last winter, for example, the ice wasn't great, so there wasn't a ton of anglers out there. I mean, the real hardcore anglers were still fishing. People that had means to do so, whether you had a four-wheeler or, whatever. There was just so many bodies of water and so many spots where it had been untouched. Well, I remember getting to these areas, guiding, for example, and I'd get to some of these humps that normally by mid-January had been blown up, right? There had been a ton of people there. Let's say on Mille Lacs, for example. Usually, we'll start close to shore. We fish some of the first break lines, and then we move out to the closer gravel bars that are kind of the secondary humps. Then we move out to the mud flats and some of the deeper gravel. And, that's kind of the progression throughout the winter. Well, I mean, I was hitting stuff along the shoreline breaks in January where there hadn't been a single hole drilled. And so when you got there, the fishing was great. And then you came back 2 weeks later and there still hadn't been anybody there and the fishing's still great. Mm-hmm. And so, some of those spots that kind of get blown up, if you're an angler going to a new location, if you pull up to a spot and it looks like, there'd been a ice derby there, it's time to look for a new spot. I think a lot can be said about kind of leaving areas or finding new ones. I'm always looking for the areas that are kind of untouched by people, because it seems like when you get there the first time, the fishing's great, and then after that the fish kind of scatter out, and even if people aren't keeping fish or harvesting fish, it still seems like they get caught and they move on, and they're going to, they're going to go find, seek out new locations. And that's always changing. I know sometimes, I guess on the flip side of that, sometimes fish are there for a reason, shallow early, because the bait, you know, the bait fish are there. As soon as it gets cold, that bait fish starts sliding out into warmer water, or maybe there's some invertebrates that hatch later in January, February. So the bait follows and then the walleye follows. So, you know, there's spots that kind of get recharged on their own, even if they did get a little bit beat up. But I think you're much better off, you know, not hitting the same spot day after day after day.
Right.
I think as a guide, we try to hit a lot of different spots. We don't just go to the same spot every single day. We try to hit a lot of different spots. And it's for that exact reason. You know, you're looking for fresh fish. You're looking for, you know, spots that might have loaded up that people kind of overlooked. Or maybe it's, you know, all the main lake points, for example, all the points that stuck off that hump got beat up. But maybe a few of the inside turns or the sharp breaks that kind of flattened out. You know, some of those areas might have gotten overlooked, and the fish are starting to load up along those areas. So, you know, as a fishing guide, I'm always kind of looking for new spots, fresh ice, if you will.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk about this a little bit before, you know, while we still have good time. Dialed In Angling, you're in your second season of filming the show, but you guys just launched a podcast. You're kind of adding to it. I kind of want to just bring it up just for the sake of awareness. I want people to learn that it exists, and that, you know, moving forward, just some great listening content. We need more podcasts out there. We need more educational conversations happening, I truly believe. So I just kind of want to highlight that a little bit. Maybe have you kind of give us a little update. What was the sort of the origin story there? What's kind of your plan with that? And what can people expect from the Dialed In Angling podcast?
Well, I more or less wanted to start it just to have the backstory of, you know, if I'm going out fishing with a particular individual at a location, whether it be meeting them at that location or bringing them with, I kind of wanted to get their story, you know, the not only the backstory on the episode, but what happened. You know, so many things happen when you're out fishing or filming that you get to kind of talk about behind the scenes, and I'm able to do so on the podcast, but also get to know them a little bit better, you know, and let the audience get to know them better. There's things where when I'm interviewing someone, even though I might be a really close friend of theirs, I didn't know about them. And so it's kind of cool. I think it's cool. I think the people listening will find it interesting. You know, anglers learn from other anglers. I'm the same. I'm continually learning as I go. I've never stopped learning since I've been a little kid. And a lot of it has to do with sitting around talking to other anglers, right? You learn so much from, you know, listening to other anglers out there, other guys, other gals, and, you know, people that I have on my show, you know, they all bring their own, you know, fishing knowledge and how they like to fish. And so the podcast, I'm able to kind of peel back the onion a little bit and let people know how they like to fish and what they're, you know, what triggers them as an angler. You know, I said on this podcast that I absolutely love finding fish. I mean, that's what drives me as an angler. I want to know what drives them. And so it's kind of cool to have the podcast. I can do that. When you're filming a TV show, you don't get to do that. You don't get to experience that. But the podcast, we certainly can. And that's been the fun part about it. Interviewing people, I've learned so much about them, their family, how they fish, what they like doing, hunting. I get to talk hunting on there, kind of, you know, whatever conversation, wherever it takes you, you get to go there, because that's the cool part about podcasts. I listen to a ton of podcasts. I listen to your show. I listen to a lot of different shows as I'm driving, because I get a ton of windshield time. I like hearing people's story. That's that in a nutshell is what makes our podcast cool. And what I get to do as a host, it's pretty cool.
We're good on time here. So anything else that, you know, we got to do to update or just to kind of promote the content or the stuff, any other closers that we should be tackling here, Tony?
You know, I just want to say, first of all, that, you know, Jason Mitchell's always been somewhat of a mentor, whether he knows it or not. I mean, he's always given me really good advice from a guide's perspective. You know, I remember when I first started my guide service and I started adding, you know, other guides to my roster. And I knew that he had a bunch of guides that, you know, had worked for him. And, you know, this is even before Jason Mitchell Outdoors. I would reach out to him at a sports show and we'd talk and we'd have really good conversations. He'd tell me how, you know, how he'd navigate, you know, certain individuals and how he'd keep it together as a team, even though you've got a bunch of strong individuals that are good anglers that might want to go different directions. And so we always had good conversations like that. And he was always willing to give me advice on that. And, you know, now even with the TV show and the podcast, you guys having me on here, it speaks volumes. I have so much respect for Jason. I watch his show all the time, for you, Taylor, for doing your podcast. And yeah, I get to kind of showcase it myself right now. And it's been a super fun experience. So I just really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Kind words for sure. I know Jason, we always speaks volumes of you and your career. Just so much respect there. But man, yeah, if any fans of ours, you know, are really into fishing and on a journey to learning and getting better at fishing, I would absolutely have to tell them to check out Dialed In Angling. And if we ever were good enough to attract a Dialed In Angling fan, then I would feel pretty darn honored and good about that. So I feel like, you know, as the industry goes, right, it's really hard. You can't, with sponsor conflicts or whatever it is, it's really, really difficult to, you know, cross-pollinate a whole bunch on video content nowadays. It just doesn't necessarily work perfectly. And there's just more stories out there that need to be told than that. But yeah, from a conversation like this long form, you know, kind of media, I think that it's one of the cool things that we almost got to do every chance we can get. So, and I know you're like one of the busiest guys on the planet. And so, man, I couldn't possibly appreciate enough the clutch, the way it was today, the short conversation that we had and your availability. These windows I know are just short and far between. So, man, I really, really appreciate it. So, that being said, man, you know, we can sign it off if there's, you know, maybe you throw out your socials or the YouTube channel, just throw out, you know, kind of some of those resources for people to find you and the content. And then, you know what, after that, I would just say happy holiday season, man. And thanks again.
Yeah, you too, Taylor. No, thanks for having me. And yeah, anglers learn from other anglers. And, you know, I try to absorb as much content as possible. So I'm always looking up other people's YouTube videos. I'm watching tons of reels. I see Jason Mitchell's stuff all the time. So yeah, I mean, if people are interested in the fishing content that we put out there, dialedinangling.com, you can subscribe on our YouTube channel. And yeah, we appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun so far, I'll tell you that.